well-being means which well-being of what? Well-being of the physical well-being. You pray for physical well-being, emotional well-being. And then intellectual well-being also we can say. Physical, emotional, intellectual well-being. So intellectual well-being will contribute for emotional well-being also. And then physical conditions can be managed if you have intellectual, emotional well-being. So the prayer intensely seeking Bhagavan's grace for intellectual, emotional, physical well-being. No, uttering names of the Lord. No, uttering names of the Lord is said to be the kavacham. Because intellectual well-being means having absolute clarity. Now, you're intellectually, you can be... Intellectual well-being means what? You know, intellectual well-being implies not being disturbed by... disturbed by ignorance, and the ignorance caused doubts. Doubts are intellectual obstacles. Intellectual obstacles mean what now? Anything which prevents you from enjoying, reveling in fullness yourself. Anything which prevents you from being yourself is an obstacle. Anything which blocks you from being yourself, nothing else. Nothing is attained here, isn't it? You are already fullness. You are already happiness, absolutely. So, Tvam Ananda Swarupaha. You are already fullness. If you are already fullness, what do you want to achieve? You are already happiness, you are already absolute peace, what do you want to achieve? Whatever you enjoy in this world will be what? Bonus. So the pleasures and the enjoyment of this world, the experiences, see, being independent of situations, when you live this life, everything will be bonus here. Because already you have enough, more than enough. When do you use this word bonus? You get what then, more than what you require, more than what you deserve, it's a bonus, isn't it? So the whole life will be bonus for you. Irrespective of, there will not be something which is undesirable for you. Why? Because nothing can cause your, nothing can disturb your easiness, nothing can disturb your fullness. But there's no, nothing is undesirable for you in the world. And you will see everything in its place. And similarly, nothing can, you are not, nothing is desirable also for you. And there's no passion or aversion towards anything, because there's no dependence on anything for you. Nothing can add to your happiness, fullness. Amazing. Only then the world becomes, life becomes bonus. And for which you should have taken ownership of your absolute nature, intrinsic nature, being fullness, happiness. So here, how Shastram sees everything. You are already happiness and fullness. You are already non-disturbable peace. A disturbable peace is a state of mind. A loosable pleasure is a state of mind. Non-loosable happiness, fullness is you. You are. Not even yours. Not even yours. For want of words, for expression, you can say yours. Luckily you. So you are the non-loosable happiness, non-disturbable peace, and you are Ananda Swarupaha. Therefore, what you want is already what you want to be, what you are already. Therefore, all that you need to do is what? You need to be yourself. Understand? You need to be yourself. See, being able to be yourself is in fact reveling in happiness, reveling in fullness, being free. Being yourself is being free. Which means you are freedom already. You are not in free, we say. You are freedom already. You are purity already. You are happiness already. You are fullness already. You are absolute peace already. Therefore, what else you want? Therefore, being yourself is more than enough. Which means there's nothing needs to be accomplished, achieved, proved, attained, for what actually you want. Which means then, just being myself is what I want. Being myself means being, reveling in fullness, being fullness. So what Shastram says, anything which blocks, anything which obstructs, anything which hinders, anything which prevents you from being yourself, anything doesn't allow you to be yourself, is looked upon as an obstacle in as a spiritual aspirant. You have only obstacle, not in attaining, obstacle in just being yourself. That's why Shastram repeatedly says, just, even the so-called, the people who do not accept Shastram, even they say, just be yourself. Be yourself. Very nice to hear, isn't it? But you're not able to be. Be yourself. So Shastram says, all your efforts are here, not for becoming better than what you are. All the efforts are to remove the obstacles which do not allow you to be yourself. Is it clear? This is the big difference. Being and becoming. The actions are performed for becoming. That is why whether which will ever be endless journey. Whereas knowledge is not for becoming, just being. There were only obstacles which do not allow you to be what you are, allow you to be yourself, and those obstacles begin with what? Intellectual obstacles first. Intellectual obstacles are in form of what? Not being able to get rid of the wrong notions. Wrong understanding, wrong perception. Therefore, intellectual obstacles have to be sorted out. So, the intellectual obstacle is ignorance is intellectual obstacle. Ignorance caused error in perception is intellectual obstacle. The notions you entertain are intellectual obstacles. They're all intellectual obstacles. These intellectual obstacles alone can be resolved. The doubts. Doubts are the intellectual obstacles. So doubts, when your doubts become resolved, then it is what? For the doubts to be resolved, we have the step called mananam. But first of all, when you have ignorance, ignorance itself is an obstacle, isn't it? First, ignorance is the obstacle. That ignorance, when it is resolved, ignorance of yourself is an obstacle which does not allow you to be yourself. So ignorance has to be resolved. So resolution of ignorance helps you overcome the obstacle, in the form of the ignorance through the knowledge. So what will help you to resolve the obstacle in the form of ignorance? Knowledge. And for that jnanam, what is that first step you need to do? Shravanam. So listening to the Shastram. How long should I be listening? How should I be listening? Listening means what? Listening itself with listening to the unfoldment of the words of the Shastram, Upanishads. Attentively, with faith, unflinching faith in the words of the Shastram. Systematically, regularly, consistently, for a length of time, then don't think of doubts. First you are doing what? It's ignorance, isn't it? So first step, this is the traditional method of studying means, first you are ignorant, there is ignorance. Ignorance is the first obstacle here. Ignorance of your swarupam is the first obstacle. If the ignorance is total, then you are yourself. In total ignorance, you are yourself. Therefore, there is no need for you to make any effort. Is it clear? In sleep, what effort can you make, do you need to make to undo the pain you have? To undo anything undesirable in sleep. I'm talking to you as a, you know, preparing you for the next set of verses. What do you need to do in deep sleep state? You do not have any, pain, do not have any pleasure. Therefore, there is no need for you to do anything in deep sleep state. You are just yourself. In total ignorance, you are yourself. But only in partial knowledge, then there is partial ignorance, the problem arises. So the partial ignorance becomes, you know, the ignorance does two things. It covers, it prevents you from seeing what you are, covering your nature. If it is, it simply covers you from seeing what you are, which itself is not a problem. That is why ignorance also is said to be avarana shaktihi. Ignorance has the unique power of covering what is. So this self-ignorance also, of not knowing what I am, covers your swarupam. Covers this, what you are, the fact what you are. Doesn't matter. But that itself does not cause any problem. Okay, covering your swarupam does not cause any problem. But the problem is, it has another power called vikshepa shaktihi. The power can make you see what you are not. Understand? It makes you see what you are not, as yourself. This is called vikshepa. And that the vikshepa cannot be there. The power of throwing up means it makes you see what you are not as yourself is not possible if there is no covering of your swarupam. So it does two things. It covers what you are, your swarupam. It makes you see, you know, what you are not. And this, because this problem is what happens there, that is the first, you know, obstacle. Therefore, ignorance is the obstacle, you know, which prevents you from being yourself. Therefore, do you need to achieve anything here? No. That is why here only you need to resolve this ignorance. Resolution of ignorance is enough. For what? You know, to just see what you are. Therefore, the seeing yourself, therefore the knowledge which you get through Shravanam helps you resolve your ignorance, helps you see what you are really. But what happens, even though you see what you are in knowledge, still, so Shravanam can help you only resolve your ignorance through blessing you with the knowledge. Afterwards, still you will have doubts, intellectual obstacles. Doubts are intellectual obstacles. Doubts really affect your well-being. Intellectual, still, doubts also disturb your easiness. Doubts are pain, in fact. Is as painful as the hunger or thirst for the one who is starving. It's a physical starving, isn't it? How it is painful. Similarly, you know, the intellectual ignorance and the doubts also disturb your easiness. Pain. And the doubts have to be resolved. All the doubts. That is why Shastram definitely prescribes the next step called Mananam. Because doubtful knowledge is as good as ignorance. So Shravanam lifts you up from being ignorant to, you know, from your ignorance to doubtful knowledge. Doubts are natural. Because only in knowledge, doubts are possible. In total ignorance, doubts are not possible. Isn't it? In some knowledge, always will give rise to doubts. That is why Shastram recommends a next step called Mananam, wherein you are supposed to, you are expected to have focused reflection on what you have already heard, understood and retained through Shravanam. So during Shravanam, what are you expected to do? You need not resolve your doubts during Shravanam. In fact, the doubts will be resolving as you are listening the more and more, but still there will be doubts. In spite of having resolved the doubts during Shravanam, still there will be doubts. The Shravanam time, keep your time only for understanding. The more you have done Shravanam for length of time, the Shravanam itself will become Mananam. The repeated Shravanam will become Mananam. So during Shravanam, what are you doing? You are not mechanically listening. You are listening with a focused attention. You try your best to be as attentive as possible. Therefore, you are trying to understand what is being said in the class. Not only understanding, you are retaining, you know, you are listening carefully, understanding what you are listening carefully, and you are trying to retain also what you have understood. Listening, understanding, retaining, all the three should happen in the Shravanam. If you have not retained what you have heard, you have not understood what you have heard, then you cannot retain. If you have not retained, then you are not qualified for dwell. Listen, reflect on. Therefore, when should I start my Mananam? People ask this question. When should I start my Mananam? If you have retained, you can start a Mananam. For you to have retained, you must have understood. For you to understand, you must have heard attentively. You must have listened, isn't it? So listening to the teaching with attention alone will help you understand. Oh, I'm not able to listen to the class attentively. Immediately don't lose your heart. It's okay, we do get disturbed a little bit. We'll go out and come back. But what I'm saying, listening with attention will help you understand, and then understanding will help you retain. And then if understanding does not take place, in spite of your trying to be attentive, then you can ask. What should you do for that? Repeated listening. Understanding does not take place means what? Repeated listening is something to be done. Until you understand, repeatedly listen. Oh, doubt doesn't arise at all, I'm very clear. Fine. still I have doubts. You know, repeated listening. Therefore, when it becomes retained, there is still some doubt, some light vagueness may be there, for which now recollect what you have retained. Reflect on what you have retained repeatedly with focused attention. So reflection on what you have retained with understanding, the focused attention will help you resolve your doubts, which are intellectual obstacles, which do not allow you to be yourself. Then you have what now? Clear, doubt-free knowledge. Okay. So there's no thing called special step here. If you have retained, and you're able to reflect on what you have already retained with the focus attention, that is mananam. There's no segregation, okay. It is simultaneous. Even then, in spite of having the knowledge, in spite of having resolved the ignorance, in spite of having resolved the doubts also, there will be the worst thing called emotional obstacles. Now, I have clear, doubt-free, ascertained. I have clear, doubt-free knowledge. My knowledge is very clear. Clear knowledge is there. Doubt-free knowledge is there. Still, the knowledge seems to be useless. Still, knowledge seems to be non-effective. Still, the knowledge has not served any purpose, because still there are, no, still I'm not myself. I'm not able to be myself. So there are emotional obstacles which obstruct, you know, which prevent you from being yourself. Before ignorantly, then doubtfully, you were not yourself. Now, knowingly, doubtlessly, you are not yourself. Why? Because emotional obstacles all the time become big hindrance, impediments, that they don't let you, allow you to be yourself. What are those emotional obstacles? Why those emotional obstacles are there? Because the mind is, isn't it? Before the knowledge, when you were suffering from ignorance, before the Shravanam, when you had ignorance, and before the Mananam also, you know, what all the wrong notions you had, what are all, you know, all your transactions in the world, as a ignorant person, all your, the whole life's transactions in this world, as an ignorant person, and with the ignorance caused wrong perceptions of the world and the self, they would have created what? You know, lot of experiences, and those experiences are still, you know, those experiences are still in your subconscious mind. And those, what is then subconscious? And those really do not go. They still surface. What is underneath will be surfacing. Do you need to totally undo them? Can you undo them? No. You know why? You have been accumulating those from timeless, no? From time immemorial, in so many janmas also. You can undo them. You need not remove them. So how to free myself from the emotional obstacles, you know, which do not allow me to be myself? How to resolve the emotional obstacles for which all the time deliberately, consciously, attentively, no, consciously remind yourself of what you are which you know now doubtlessly, clearly. Understand? That's why for a person to constantly remind oneself of constantly remembering, to remember what one is, one's real nature is, one must have done Shravanam and Mananam, isn't it? It's a constant, continuous, consistent, is it, remembering of one's real nature, which one has clearly, doubtlessly understood, retained through Shravanam and Mananam, which is called contemplation. So what is contemplation? What is contemplation? You're continuously remembering yourself, remembering what you are. Constantly remembering what you are. When you are remembering yourself, what are you doing? Continuously you remind yourself of. Reminding yourself continuously, so you are constantly thinking of yourself, means what are you doing? You focus attention on what? What you are. It is not effortful work, isn't it? You are the thinker, and your object of your thought is what? Thinking is your own real nature, what you are. There's no thinker, thought, meditator, meditated difference. This is what is contemplation, which is meditation. Understand? But meditation is not contemplation. Is it clear now? Very simple. And this constant dwelling upon what you are your real essential nature, being Atma, in due course of time will become ever remembered fact, unforgettable fact, which is called, which is not just the knowledge, it's a clear, doubt-free, ever remembered, unforgettable, ascertained knowledge, which is said to be remaining steadfast in the vision of one's own swarupam, one's own real nature. Then you are in the world being endowed with the body, mind and complex, but you are yourself. when you are yourself, there is objectivity. You're objective towards everything. So, in being objective, you are free. Therefore, Shastram helps you not to attain something. Shastram helps you to be yourself. To take ownership of what you are already. That is why here the Gaudapada Acharya, the very first chapter, introduced the analysis of three states of experience. And there, I did the whole of first chapter earlier. But now I wanted to see it a little differently. Why? Because the portion where we stopped now, exactly, Gaudapada Acharya presented the limitations involved in the thinking of many philosophers. Even though they are great philosophers, even though they are great thinkers, and they have worked a lot, they contributed in their own way a lot, still, their accomplishments, their achievements, their efforts are not undervalued within the relative, within the realm of material accomplishments, material gains, but in terms of the knowledge of the truth, and they're all confused. According to him, they're all confused. Because, so that's what he wants to show. For a person who is seeking the solution, you know, for his problem, and he seeks a permanent solution for his problem, not a temporary remedy, isn't it? A spiritual aspirant is not the one who is seeking temporary remedy. The spiritual aspirant is the one who is seeking a permanent solution. So the freedom from the problem for good, isn't it, is what he is sought after by a spiritual aspirant. And for what the problem being such ignorance of the truth, and here knowledge of the truth is the only solution here, only means. And that truth, as long as a person searches for within the objective world, and the truth, no, he can never arrive at the truth, and there's no truth at all. Why? Because he established the first chapter, the entire objective world, being an object itself, is the is the cause for its being limited. Being an object, the entire world is an object of knowledge, which means being an object of knowledge has dependent existence. An object of knowledge enjoys only dependent existence. An object which enjoys a dependent existence does not have independent existence of its own. Therefore, it is not real. If it is not real, is it unreal? It is not unreal also. It is mithya, a given order of, it enjoys empirical reality, It is a relative reality. It is mithya, but is not absolute reality. Understand? So that which is not absolutely real is not the absolute truth, isn't it? Therefore, any research, any search, any, you know, examination, any experiment within this world, objective world, which is mithya, will, you know, bless you with the knowledge of the subtle facts which are within the realm of the mithya world also will be mithya facts. Water is H2O is a fact, but it is mithya fact. You know why? The fact is about mithya object. We do not undermine that. We do not undermine that knowledge of that fact. We do not undervalue the knowledge of that fact. We do value, but we should not overvalue. What does it mean? Knowledge of the given factor called water being H2O is useful knowledge, but it will not help me. No, it will not sort out my problem. So to sort out my problem, I need the knowledge of the absolute reality. I need knowledge of the ultimate truth. I need not, no, I don't need the knowledge of the relative facts obtaining within the realm of relative reality, relatively real universe. Use one example, from here you can understand. That is why any scientific discovery is not undermined or undervalued. All the efforts of all the philosophers and all the contributions of, you know, different people who have profound knowledge in their given field, given discipline, and who contributed a lot for enhancing the infrastructure of the well-being through the technological development, they're all highly revered people. Still, if they say they have found a solution for the, you know, human misery for good, then they are wrong. Because absolute freedom from human misery is dependent on, is caused by the ignorance. And, you know, and that ignorance is what? We sort out only by knowledge. Of what? Of the subject. Because the truth is, the truth is what? That which is non-negatable is the truth. That which is, you know, that which has independent existence is the truth. The non-negatable, independently existing vastu alone is the reality. And therefore, what is, we take the whole jagat and we see these two as subject and object. This universe, the whole life here, the whole universe here is what now we say, there are only two things, subject and object. Everything can be reduced to, what now, two. The entire universe becomes reduced to what, comes under the category of the object of knowledge. There's nothing thing which does not come under the category of the object of knowledge here. Except you, yourself. except I. So the mind means what? Ahankara, memory, ego, memory, intellect, mind, all these thoughts which constitute the entire mind also comes under the category of the world of objects, which means I alone, I alone does not come under the category of the objects. The subject alone, in fact, you can say subject alone, subject of knowledge is the knower. Because I refer to myself as the knower, the subject of knowledge, I, the knower alone, does not come under the category of the objects. And here the Shastram says, the truth is never an object. Why it is not an object? Anything which has dependent existence is mithya, not the satyam. And here the object, any object has only dependent existence. Therefore it is mithya, it is not the truth. What about this waking universe? Mithya. How? It is as dependent as the your dream universe. Not independent existence. Therefore, the subject is, you know, the truth, if only two things, what will you do now? Easy, isn't it? The entire world, object, anything, any object has dependent existence. The entire world comes under the category of the object. Therefore, it has only dependent existence. Therefore, it is mithya. Then, if I leave the entire universe, what does not come under the category of the subject, object is the subject. Therefore, the truth is what? No. Is subject alone is the truth. You know, truth is available as a swarupam of the subject. Is it clear? Hope you're really, you see the beauty of development. Then what is that truth? What is that, you know, subject? What is who the knower is? What the knower is? What am I? Who am I? The knower. Then there is no such a thing called a knower without the known. Why? You cannot call the light illuminator if there is no illumined object. Isn't it? If the light without the illumined object will be what? It's the light, isn't it? Similarly, knower without the known will be what? Not the knower. Non-knower, isn't it? Without the status, it is a status. Knower is a status, isn't it? Illuminator is a status. Recognition of somebody is only when the person enjoys some status. Isn't it? In even day-to-day life, the worldly life also what now? Somebody is a counselor, MP, big lord, you know. Recognition is always, recognition goes with the status. No status, who cares for you? Completely non-recognized. It's called coming to limelight, isn't it? Status. Therefore, here, the knower status, you know, the subject of knowledge, the knower status is enjoyed by when I enjoy the status of being. I enjoy the status of being the knower in the presence of the known, isn't it? In the dream world is, I am the knower of the dream. In waking universe, I am the knower of the waking universe. I am the knower of the dream state, deep sleep state of the mind. And the knower of the non-existent universe in deep sleep state. I'm a knower of the existent universe, waking universe. I'm the knower of the dream universe. I'm the knower of the non-existence of the dream and the waking universes. I am always knowing what is not. So what is not also gives me what? The status of being the knower. To say what is not, understand? So what is gives me the status of being the knower. What is not also gives me the status of being the knower. Because waking universe being there, but now knower of knower status. Dream universe being there, knower of the dream universe. No dream universe, no waking universe, but no. Still the knower of the absence of waking and dream universes. So present, knower of the presence, knower of the absence is distinct from the known presence and the known absence. Because presence is an object of knowledge, absence also is an object of knowledge. The knower of the presence of the universe, the knower of the absence of the universe is distinct from what? Known, which means ever-present knower is the knower of the presence and the temporarily present, temporarily absent universe. Ever-present, eternally present knower is the knower of the temporarily present, temporarily absent worlds, waking, dream, okay, worlds. That eternally present, ever present knower alone does not come under the category of the known. Therefore, this knower is not, the knower has independent existence. But the knower is dependent on the known only for the knower status, but not for the existence. Knower is not dependent on the known for his existence, but the knower is dependent on the known only for the knower status. Is it clear? Therefore, who is that knower who is exists independent of the known? What is that knower? What that knower is? I. What are you? how to arrive at what I am. Understand? And Gaudapada Acharya uses what now? Avasthatraya Prakriya. Analysis of the three states of experience. Leave the body. Don't worry, it's already, you know, very well object. Leave the sense powers. Already you know they're all objects of knowledge. Leave the pranas. They're all objects of knowledge. Now, where it is difficult to be objective, you know, to some extent, by listening to the Vedanta classes continuously, slowly you become objective towards the body. Certain degree of objectivity towards the body will be possible after quite a good amount of Shastra study. But being objective towards the mind is the problem. In a way, being objective towards mind is very difficult. It was great difficulty. Why? Because mind is the subtlest of the material manifestations. Mind is the subtlest of the elemental product. which alone is capable of manifesting, having the manifestation of consciousness. Understand? And mind being the only, even though consciousness is all pervasive, consciousness is in and through everything. The consciousness is not manifest anywhere. So non-manifest consciousness is non-recognizable, non-transactable consciousness. And consciousness happens to be, the manifest in the mind, human mind, isn't it? Therefore, it is recognizable only in the human mind. Certain degree of recognition of consciousness is possible in living beings. But exactly what consciousness is recognizable only in the mind. For which, and that consciousness, when is the truth, and it can be recognized only as the subject, the swarupam of the knower, that which enjoys the status of being the knower, okay, not as the known. Consciousness is available for recognition as the one which enjoys the status of being the knower, not as the known. When I say that which is available for recognition as enjoying the status of being the knower means is available as the truth of the knower. Understand? Which means that which enjoys the status of being the knower is the content, substance of the substantive I. That is the meaning of the I. Therefore, I has to be resolved finally in that truth. Resolve the I in the truth, then you can resolve idam in the truth. only two things, subject, object. Subject is indicated by the pronoun, first person singular pronoun, I. The rest of, the rest, the entire rest, the rest in its entirety, other than I, being an object, is indicatable through the pronoun this. There is no this without the I. Why? Known has dependent existence. The object has is dependent on, object is dependent on the subject. The known is dependent on the knower for its existence. Therefore, knowing the subject is as good as knowing the end truth of the entire object. By knowing one thing, everything else becomes known as it were. What is this knower? It is inseparable from the mind. Because distancelessly inseparable, therefore you have to, that is why we need, isn't it? This analysis is not to physically separate the, separate the mind from consciousness, but cognitively distinguish the consciousness from the mind. Cognitively separate the truth from the mind. Just as cause and effect are physically inseparable, clay and pot are physically inseparable, but cognitively, truth of the pot being clay can be distinguished intellectually. Here also, there's an intellectual cognitive separation or of a distinction of the truth from the mind is arrived at through the avasthatraya prakriya, the analysis of three states of experience. Let me tell you, now for you only two things, isn't it? Subject, object. The whole world is of, the whole world being an object of knowledge. The whole world is nothing but what? Constituent of plurality, multiplicity of varied, innumerably countless forms and names, the objects. And the plurality of the varied multiplicity of the varied objects, externally perceived objects, is determined by the plurality of the cognitions in the mind. So internal plurality or multiplicity of cognitions determine the plurality or the multiplicity of externally perceived objects. Is it clear? Is it true or not? Whatever cognition is there, that object you see outside. So internal cognitions, listen carefully, internally plural, multiple cognitions determine the plurality or the multiplicity of the external external gross objects or externally perceived objects. Is it clear? So, internal plurality of cognitions determine the external plurality of objects. Now, we'll come to this. Now, what is it? Now, we stop here. Now, next step. What is cognition? What are these cognitions? To understand what these cognitions are, take first one cognition. What is it, one cognition without which any other cognition cannot be there? I cognition. I am is cognition, self-cognition. This is what? The cognition, this cognition, isn't it? You reduce everything into what now? I and this. The cognitions of anything and everything in the world is what? Idam cognition, this cognition, isn't it? The I cognition, I am, is cognition. Therefore, it takes this one cognition, understanding the one cognition, what it is in fact as good as understanding all the cognitions. Don't need to understand each and every cognition. Okay? What is a cognition? Or experience. Use these different words. Cognition. Experience. Perception. Understanding. Do different words, isn't it? It's a slight difference. What is a cognition? What's an experience? Every cognition, even though we use the term I cognize, I experience, etc., as though cognition seems to be a unitary thing, really speaking, every cognition involves two aspects, two factors. Like what? If I say there is, in the night time, when you come here, if I say there is light in the room, there is illumination, this room is illumined. When I say the room is illumined, means there is illumination of this entire room in the night time. And you all say what? The bulb burns. Therefore, there is light, there is illumination. The bulb burns. We use the singular verb, isn't it? Bulb burns. Burning, illumining. The bulb, no, the light illumines. In fact, illumination involves two aspects. What are they? Perceivable, visible bulb and invisible electricity. Electricity without the bulb also cannot become the illumination. The bulb without the electricity also cannot become the illumination. Two, invisible electricity with the visible bulb alone become illumination. In every illumination, understand now, in illuminate, when you say burning, illumination means two aspects are involved. Bulb cannot burn by itself, isn't it? Without electricity. Electricity without the bulb also, what burning will be there? Two are involved. Similarly here, cognition also involves two aspects. Every cognition. I am is cognition. There is a vrittihi, which is a material aspect, and there is consciousness. So consciousness without the vritti cannot become the cognition. Vritti without consciousness cannot even enjoy the state existence, status of, cannot even enjoy existence. So how can it become the cognition? Consciousness without the thought also, thought is called vrittihi. Chit chaitanyam plus vrittihi, consciousness plus vrittihi, the thought, is equal to cognition. Consciousness plus thought is equal to experience. Consciousness plus thought is equal to knowledge. Consciousness plus thought is equal to perception. There is no such thing called perception or experience or knowledge or cognition without, understand now, minus consciousness or without the thought. The two together alone is what? No. Two aspects together contribute for cognition. And here the question comes. There are innumerably countless, that we can say there are so many cognitions, isn't it? Keeping with the number of objects. There's a plurality of cognitions and experiences, which means perceptions. The plurality belongs to the vrittis or to the consciousness. The plurality belongs to the vrittis, not to the consciousness. Understand? One consciousness, many thoughts come, therefore many cognitions. Is it clear? This is the first thing you understand. Therefore consciousness is one. You first arrive at it. You are very objective here. You are just taking the cognition. I cognition and this cognition. Cognitions. Under this, these, isn't it? In all the cognitions, so many cognitions. Yes. The plurality is of the cognitions, not of the consciousness, which means consciousness is singular, thoughts are plural. The plurality of cognitions is because of the plurality of the thoughts, consciousness is not plural, singular. Okay? First understand, one consciousness is one. Thereafter, so next step, I'm taking you very important lesson, listen to me carefully. Then you say, thoughts come and thoughts go. Therefore, there is cognition in waking state, thoughts are. Therefore, I am, cognition is. The world is, the cognition is. The same way in dream also. There is external plurality of dream objects. And there is the internal plurality of dream cognitions. And there also you can separate cognitions and cognition. Take the cognitions. Separate consciousness and vritti. Then there is a plurality belongs to the thoughts. And consciousness is singular, isn't it? And now we understand, so the thoughts come and thoughts go. When you're all here, the whole day in waking state itself, whole day, we have so many cognitions of so many things, so many experiences, isn't it? which means the experiences change. Cognitions keep on changing. Perceptions keep on changing. Which means, what is that which is changing? Thoughts change, perceptions change, cognitions change, but consciousness is unchanging, changeless. This is called understanding the Swarupam. One, you have understood, singular, is it? Now you are understanding changeless. Oneness of consciousness, changelessness of consciousness. Which means, what about, you know, in deep sleep state also there is experience. Dream state is a dream state of is a mind is an experience. Waking state of the mind is an experience. And deep sleep state of the mind also is an experience. Three different states of experience. Every experience is nothing but, is it? Thought plus consciousness. In deep sleep state also is experience. There also we have two vrittis. Because no experience is possible otherwise. What are the vrittis? Only two vrittis are there in deep sleep state. Ajnana vrittihi. I did not know anything. And then sukha vritti. I slept so well. I slept well. Which means there is experience of sukham, painlessness, worrylessness. And there's experience of ignorance. What is ignorance? I am. There's no knowledge. The world is. There's no knowledge. The knowledge being not there, knowledge being not manifest is called what? Ignorance, isn't it? Ignorance is nothing but unmanifest knowledge. Therefore, we say there is the two vrittis, ajnana vritti and ananda vritti. Because it's two vrittis, you have two experiences. Understand now? You have two cognitions. There is experience of two things. I slept very well. I did not know anything. Aham sukham aswapsam kima kinchidapi na vedisham. I did not know anything. I slept very well. When do you say? On waking up from sleep. How do you say? No, because you have memory. How is memory possible? Memory is always of the experience, previous experience. The experience is always of an object. What is the object of experience in the deep sleep state? Ignorance and painlessness. The two objects, ignorance is experienced, painlessness is experienced, and those objects of experience, understand? And that experience is, no, there's memory of the experience, that memory alone you're recollecting and talking, isn't it? And waking, which means, in every state of experience, there are vrittis. There are only two vrittis in deep sleep state. Therefore, you have some experience. And dream thoughts are there. The only difference between dream universe and the waking universe is, in dream experience also, there is external plurality of dream objects. In dream also, there is internal plurality of dream cognitions. What is the difference between waking and dream? In both the experience, you have what? External plurality of external objects and the plurality of internal cognitions. What's the difference then? Only difference is the dream objects enjoy short time. Span of life is very short. The waking objects have longer duration of time. One difference. Second difference is the dream objects are thought, products of your own thoughts, vasana products, products of your own vasanas. So intangible dream objects are products of intangible vasanas. The waking objects are products of tangible elements. That's all the difference. Understand? There's no difference. That universe and this universe, both are equally mithya dependent. What I want to come now, we arrive at what now? Oneness of consciousness, changelessness of consciousness. Is it clear? Clear or not? Now, therefore, we say this consciousness is one unchanging, invariable factor in all the changing variable thoughts. Variable, one continuously present in all the discontinuous variable, mutually exclusive states of experience. Is it clear? Now the question comes. You have to understand. This is one day, three states of experience, isn't it? This is how every day is nothing but repeatedly, continuously going through three states of experience. So day after day after day after day, states of the mind, states of experience changes, the cognitions keep changing, perceptions keep changing, experiences keep changing, but consciousness continues to be the same, one and uniform, the same. And not only that, all the cognitions in all the experiences, in all three states of the mind, what now? Pervaded by consciousness. Understand? Which vritti is not pervaded by consciousness? Therefore, consciousness is all pervasive. Second thing, now, not only day after day, month after month, year after year, then birth to birth, then creation to creation, srishti to srishti, janma to janma. Understand? Consciousness is eternally there. The srishti comes, srishti after deluge, again srishti comes. Pralaya, the universe goes and comes. After death, now again new body comes. This body goes, new body comes. What to say? The consciousness continues to be there. Therefore, consciousness is timeless, eternal factor. How many things we have done? First, you start with one, changeless, independent, all-pervasive, eternal factor. Of the two. Listen now. Now you have to say, so that consciousness is what now? Chit is the word we use for consciousness. Now here you are analyzing the this consciousness is Sat. This consciousness is the existence. Consciousness and existence are not two different things at all. How do we say that? On what basis? How to arrive at that next step? I'm going to say finally, you are Satchidananda's Roop, Satchidananda. Okay, that's what I'm talking. you take the definition of exist, the reality. Reality is the existence, isn't it? Reality is the existence. What is the definition of the reality? Absolute reality, which is the existence. That which is in all three states of all three periods of time, and that which is not negatable in at any time is satyam. Trishu kaleshu abadhitam satyam. That which is non-negatable is satyam. Sat. Now that definition, what is it which is non-negatable? You had negate everything as what? Okay, come to the, just the thought, isn't it? What is non-negatably there? Consciousness. Therefore, this one changeless, unchanging, indivisible, all-pervasive, timeless consciousness alone, independent timeless consciousness alone, is non-negatable. Therefore, this consciousness and Sat, Chit and Sat are not two different things. This consciousness is the reality, the existence, this Sat. Many ways of unfolding is one way. Is it clear now? Clear or not? Okay. Now you have to say, still your eye is sitting separately, okay? You're only seeing consciousness. You have to say this consciousness, which is one, indivisible, partless, unchanging, changeless, all-pervasive, independent, timeless, eternal, consciousness is the existence. This consciousness, which is the existence, is I, isn't it? Is it to the I? That you have to say. Now you are asking this question. Only of coming to this point only, you can say, what am I here? What is this I here? What should be taken as the nature of I? Whenever you want to arrive at the nature of something, the truth of something, you have to see what is intrinsic and what is transitory, transient, isn't it? Like in hot water, there is heat, but it is what? Not permanent, transient. Comes and goes. But the heat in fire does not come, therefore it will not go, which is intrinsic. Therefore, that is the intrinsic nature. Heat is the intrinsic nature. How do you say? The heat in the hot water is not intrinsic. It is not the nature. But the heat in fire is intrinsic. Therefore, it is the nature. Similarly here, what does not go, what does not come alone does not go, what does not arrive and depart, what is permanently there is the intrinsic nature. And here, in the I am, I, the cognition, if we take the cognition I am, what come arrives and departs is the thought. Isn't true? Is it true or not? Just take the cognition, thought comes and thought goes. What does not come and what does not go? Consciousness. Therefore, consciousness is the intrinsic nature. Therefore, consciousness is the truth of I, Swarupam of I. Now you have to say, therefore, Aham Sat, how about Aham Satchid Atma. You have to see every time I am putting Aham Satchid Atma. And one more thing is there, isn't it? I, the Self, am consciousness, the reality, the existence. But this ID consciousness existence, am happinessfulness, that is yet to be established. Now, the next step is, it is this consciousness is absolute happiness. It is this consciousness is absolute fullness. Therefore, I, the Self, am consciousness, existence, fullness, happiness. I am happiness. I is equal to consciousness, existence, fullness. Wave is water, H2O. I is equal to consciousness, existence, fullness, happiness. How do you say this happiness? The inner logic here. Only logically we are establishing everything. All the Atma Swarupam being Satchidananda, consciousness, existence, happiness is arrived at through logic, through reasoning, with the support of the Shruti, Shastra. There is a, you can, here, you can use the Anumanam, you know. The inference you are using here. Whenever you are involving inference, you are using inference. Inference involves four factors. Some factors involved here. What are those four factors? First, we have to say Pakshaha. It is not in the very beginning of Mandukya, second chapter. I'm again to bring it back. Pakshaha is equal to Atma, the Self, I, the Self. The topic under discussion is called Pakshaha. Now you have to arrive at the conclusion. The conclusion to be arrived at is called Sadhyam. What is the conclusion you arrive at? I, the Self, am, I, the Atma, am happiness. Is sadhyam. I am fullness. I am happiness. Not mechanically saying, okay? It's a fact. That is why you have to understand the fact first, then you can dwell upon the fact. Then you can ascertain the fact, isn't it? The fact itself is not known. And how, what we dwell upon? That is why we don't believe in other meditation, understand? You don't even know what the truth is. Now are you going to ascertain the truth? So I am happiness. Aham anandaha, purnanandaha. I am absolutely limitless happiness. Is the fact to be arrived at? Conclusion to be, not simply your conclusion, the fact to be arrived at. The sadhyam. So, pakshaha, atma, under discussion. And it is this aham purananda swarupaha. The next, for which, how do you say that? I am happiness. You need some hetu, isn't it? Hetu is, what is the reason for you to say that you are fullness? Prema aspadam. Atma is, one's own self is the most loved one. Is the cause. Unconditionally loved. Self is the most unconditionally loved, is the hetu, reason. Therefore, Atma is of the nature of happiness. Sadhyam is Atma is happiness. Not Atma. I am happiness. Better if you, I am happiness. I, the self, am happiness because I, the self, am the most unconditionally loved. I'm the only unconditionally loved, the most loved. Understand? And for which you need what? You need some Vyapti Jnanam. Vyapti Jnanam means what? You know, you always connect. In this world, it is like Vyapti Jnanam means, wherever there is smoke, there is fire. Yatra yatra dhumaha, tatra tatra vannihi. This is the Vyapti Jnanam, isn't it? You connect, it's called Vyapti means connecting things. You connect the fire with the smoke. The knowledge of a given object with its associate. Isn't it? Similarly here also you connect here. What is the Vyapti Jnanam here? Wherever there is, you know, lovability, desirability, there is happiness. Any object which is lovable, loved or desired, or anything which enjoys the status of being the lovable and desirable, enjoys the status of being the source of happiness. Isn't it true? Yatra yatra premaspadatvam, tatra tatra ananda hetutvam. So beautiful. What does it mean? Whatever we like in the world, whatever we love in the world, we like it only if it pleases us. Only if it makes us happy. Isn't it? Who is a fool in this world to go after things which constantly make you unhappy? What is separation? Why do you separate ourselves from people, things, situations? Unhappiness, sorrow, pain. Isn't it? Anything which is hurtful. The hurting, unpleasing, displeasing. Isn't it? Making you sorrowful, you want to get rid of, run away from it. Anything you associate with, there must be some pleasure, some joy, some happiness. Isn't it? Therefore, an object is loved means that object enjoys some degree of happiness. Enjoy what now? Some, it is a source of happiness or pleasure. An object of pleasure is desirable. An object of pain is non-lovable. Okay, now the question comes. I love so many things in the world. They're all are the objects of pleasure. Yes, they're all objects of pleasure because, but they can't give, isn't it? All these objects, the so-called objects of pleasure, are not objects of pleasure always. Sometimes they're objects of pleasure. Sometimes they're not objects of pleasure. Pain. The object of pleasure becomes an object of pain. Sometimes, isn't it? That is why, how long are you, are you in love with things and people? The love for anybody in the world is, basically speaking, love for oneself. Shastram says, there is no such thing called love for anything, anybody in the world at all. Bitter fact, truth. The love for anything in the world, the love for anybody in the world is for love for oneself. Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Love for wife is love for oneself. Love for husband is love for oneself. Love for children is love for oneself. Love for parents is love for oneself. Love for anything in the world is love for oneself. Why? Because anything which I love, as long as it fulfills certain conditions, I love it. It serves some my personal interest. When the object or person or thing or situation fails to fulfill the conditions, love disappears. That is why love for anything in the world is conditional love. I'm not saying don't love at all. Of course, it's mutual, it's natural, isn't it? Conditional love. But unconditionally, if anything is loved in the world, that is yourself. That is what love for yourself is, the unconditional love. So having conditional love for this is not wrong. It's natural. Don't feel guilty, bad about it. No, I love. If anybody says, I love my children more than myself, and Shastram says, it is the biggest bluff. That is why never ever be given to romantic, flowery words. No, I love you with your... It's all stupid. Unconditionally, the most loved is one's own self. How do you say that? Because... Another reason, you have to say, how do you know that you love, you are the most unconditionally loved for yourself? Because I love, because I want my existence to be there forever. I never like the non-existence of myself. I want to live long, 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 longer, longest, longest forever. I want to live long. I want to be there always. The love for existence, continuous existence of one's own self is always there. How do you say that? Nobody wants to die. The person who wants to die in the deathbed also wants to die not because he thinks death will give him relief from pain, suffering. That is why who wants to commit a suicide, he doesn't hate himself. Understand? He hates the suffering he goes through. He wants to put an end to the suffering, therefore he wants to commit a suicide. To be frank, everyone loves the pleased self. Therefore, what I want to say, I want to live forever. I want my existence, continuous existence. Which means, I want to be there, my existence must be there forever. Understand? I want to be there forever. I don't want to die. I want to live long. Which means that desire for one's existence, continuous existence of one's own self. Is there or not? Tell me. If everything is, you are properly placed, nobody will like to die. Really speaking. Nobody likes death, to be frank. Everybody, really, that's a fact. Swamiji used to tell this story. You know, this is his own coin story. One devotee was there. Every day he was going to the temple and asking Bhagavan, "Oh Lord, please help me merge in you yourself. Please help me to become one with you. Please help me to become one with you." Every day he was praying. Simply a simple devotee, you know. And he was not going out of the temple for a long time. He used to be late, you know. All the time he used to pray and he was not going late. Every day before closing the temple, he used to stand and pray like this. It was getting late for the archer, the priest. He wanted to close the temple and go away, you know. So he thought one day, like, every day he comes and troubles me like this, you know. I think he should pray and go away, no? He doesn't go, he delays all the time. So one day the priest stood behind the statue, you know, the murti in the temple, and said, when he was praying, "Okay, my dear devotee, come tomorrow 9 o'clock and then I will take it into myself." Finished. The next day onward, the devotee never went to the temple. Why? Because he really thought Bhagavan will take him and gulp him. Now, what I want to say, death is not desirable because continuous life is desirable, which means there is a love for the self. Understand? And that love for the self is unconditional. Love for the self alone is unconditional. But love for anything in the world is conditional. Which means that's why the love also goes. Understand? Therefore, and love for the self being love for life, continuous existence being there, self. There is love for continuous existence of the self. Therefore, the love for the self is unconditional love. And the self being the most loved, self being the unconditionally loved, self must be of the source of happiness. Self must be the happiness. Love is always for something which gives you some happiness, isn't it? Some pleasure. But self must be the greatest source of happiness. Self must be, consciousness must be the greatest source of happiness, the only source of happiness. Because consciousness is the only, self is the most loved, unconditionally loved. The love for continuous life, continuous existence of the self is the proof for the self being the most loved, the unconditionally loved. Understand? Which means the self must be the very happiness. It's called inference. There's no source of happiness. When you understand as the truth of the universe, you say, you use the word limitlessness. And as the truth of the self, you use the word anandaha, happiness. Now, therefore, what do you understand? What's the conclusion now? Yatra yatra prema aspadatvam, wherever there is the status of being an object of love, tatra tatra ananda hetutvam, there is a status of being the source of happiness. This is the Vyapti Jnanam. From this Vyapti, we understand what? Hetu. Why Atma is the source of, Atma is the source of happiness. Now, because Atma is the most loved, unconditionally loved, there is the Hetu. Isn't it? Prema Aspadatvata. Atma Ananda Swarupaha. Inferential, inferred knowledge. It's not, okay, very clear. Now what do you say? Now all the three have come now. Therefore, the truth of the I, the content of I, when you say, the cognition, take the vritti, see the consciousness. That consciousness is what? One, changeless, divisionless, all-pervasive, independent, eternal, timeless consciousness, which is the existence because of its non-negatability, because of its timelessness. And therefore it is the conscious which is the existence, and being the most unconditionally loved, is of the nature of happiness. Therefore, I the self am consciousness, existence, happiness. Aham Satchidananda Swarupaha. This is how the truth is. This is only Tvampada Lakshyartha. We have to understand what? Implied meaning of the word Tvam, you. In Mahavakyam Tattvamasi, you are using the logic. Logically, through reasoning, you arrive at your Swarupam being consciousness, which is the existence, which is of the nature of fullness or happiness. But now we have to understand what? The truth of the cosmos, Brahman. And truth of the cosmos, the Brahman, also is of the nature of consciousness, existence, limitlessness. That you cannot arrive at through logic, that you understand with the help of the Shastram. Where you use Shruti, where you use Yukti. To understand Tvampada Lakshyartha, to arrive at the truth of the individual being consciousness, existence, happiness, you use the reasoning with the Shruti. But to arrive at the truth of the Brahman reality, of the universe, truth of the cosmos, entire cosmos, you use only with the help of the Shruti. No Yukti, no reasoning. And thereafter, to understand the oneness of the truth of the individual and the truth of the whole, also you are not going to use your Yukti, the reasoning, only with the support of the Shruti, the scripture, you can understand the oneness also. Only when all the arrive at the thing, your knowledge will be complete. Understand? This is called self-analysis. You have to go to two more things. Analysis of the total, then finally analysis of the oneness of the reality. Only then knowledge will be complete. Now you have done how much? How much you have arrived at? That is why doubts are possible. Be with the Shravanam first. Shravanam. Doubts come means you have to be still in, you wait to have understanding. Now that is why I am telling you this. All this is this much today. How Gaudapada Acharya sees, because it is very painful for many of us, or all of us, or some of us. Oh my God, Patanjali Rishi, my God, what a yoga philosopher. The eightfold limbs of yoga. Patanjali Rishi, who has the qualification, who got the title, Rishi title. How can he go wrong? Kapila Rishi, Purusha Prakriti, so clearly established. Purusha and Prakriti, both are parallel realities. not needed. How he also has a rishi's title. How can he be wrong? Jaimini, my God, Karma Kandida Mimamsaka, who really tells you what all you can accomplish through performance of rituals, the karma, who has thorough knowledge of Karma Kanda rituals, what all rituals have to be performed, how they have to be performed, what all benefits you can enjoy, how you can play with the elements, how you can have all sorts of siddhis, occult powers. Sitting here, my voice alone can hear, I can disappear physically here. All supernatural, isn't it? Occult powers. Suddenly you can hear my voice from, you know, so there's a small ant will be, you know, fly, not this, no, not a fly, ant in this organ. What again? Moth. I can enter into the moth, and you can hear my voice from moth will be sitting. Huge Swamini figure will go, and my voice can come from that. So all powers, all sorts of occult powers one can accomplish. All sorts of miraculous powers I can accomplish. Materializing capacity, I can give you. What is in my, no, I got some walnuts in my dabba. I can, without getting up and going walking, I can just get them and give you. You will all finish, you'll fall flat. Because all these materializing things are all possible. All such things are accomplishable through practice of meditation. So what? So karma kanda, upasana kanda, you know, the profound art you have, implement the knowledge. It is not, first of all, knowledge must be flawless, thorough knowledge. Then implement the knowledge. What benefit you cannot enjoy? Artha, kama, dharma. All the supernatural things, they all come under the category of artha, kama, dharma only. What is not possible? Such Jaimini, who has this rishi status, he is seen as a confused person here. Gurupada Acharya. That is why we all feel a little painful. All rishis are seen, you know. Why? Because Gurupada Acharya says, come on, for accomplishing artha, kama, dharma, you have to know the karma, then implement the karma. You can enjoy artha, kama, dharmas, no doubts. The more you can accomplish artha, kama, dharma, you know, by implementing, the more you know, then you are more successful. Relatively, you are successful. But absolutely, you are not successful. Because still there is bondage. In spite of being the highly accomplished person, within, in the relative sense, you are still bound. With all your powers, you are bound. There's still a sense of limitation, sense of inadequacy, set on I, irrespective of what you have accomplished. You got it? Therefore, your problem being the sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy being centered on I is, and that problem, isn't it, will be there undisturbed, no, without any disturbance. Comfortably that problem will be sitting there. As long as there is knowledge of the truth, ignorance of the truth is there. And ignorance of the truth, you know, will be there as long as you search for the truth in the external world of objects. Why? Because, understand, the truth has to be searched where it is available. Even though you cannot save, there is no, even though truth is everywhere, it is be available, it has been searched where it is recognizable, available for recognition. And it is, and the, understand the truth, the definition of the truth, reality, isn't it? That which is non-negatable, that which is independent, is the truth. Independent. Dependent is mithya. Therefore, the truth can never be arrived at through the search within the dependent mithya world of objects. Any amount of research you have within the realm of the material world, the objective world, your search can bless you with accomplishment of many discoveries, inventions, which can help you in improve your infrastructure in the lifestyle, which will not help you arrive at the truth. Truth is never not an object. The truth is, what now? If it's not an object, what else is there? Subject. The subject is the truth. Subject also, what now? The subject status is also mithya. Understand? Therefore, consciousness, this consciousness, existence, fullness is not the knower, not the known. Neither the knower nor the known. Knower is only subject. Okay, understand? Conscious is not the known. Never will be an object of knowledge. Nor is it consciousness the knower. Because knower is only status attributed to consciousness from the standpoint of the known. Understand? Consciousness is neither the cause nor the effect, nor the knower nor the known. It is distinct, different from the knower and the known. That consciousness is what now? I, the self, am pure consciousness, which is the existence of everything, which is of the nature of happiness, fullness. Therefore, Gaudapada Acharya is going to now say, conclude his presentation of the list of thoughtfully confused people in his 29th verse. Do we have time to start the 29th verse?